If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Peter Whale, Executive Director of Strategic Minerals, SML. His ticker there. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Hi there, Justin. Good day to you. Long time no speak.
Yeah, well, I just looked at the last time we recorded there. It was, in fact, the last day of September. So we're in now last day, March, 6 months ago. But it's nice to get an update. So before we dig into some of the details, for people maybe not familiar with Strategic, just give us a brief summary as to what you're all about, Peter.
Certainly. So Strategic Minerals is diversified company with various interests. We're profitable overall. We have a producing asset in New Mexico that supplies magnetite. We have a near production asset in South Australia, which is a copper project. And then we're busy down in Cornwall with a development project, which is tin, tungsten and copper.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so take us through the US side, the US subsidiary, which operates the Cobre project this week. You had some news out there. Tell us about that, if you could, Peter.
Yeah, so Southern Minerals Group, which is the subsidiary we have in the US, it's effectively the core of Strategic Minerals. It was the original asset that was vended into the company long before the existing board was fully involved. But it's always had a yearly rollover to the access from the mine owner for the supply of magnetite. And we've been trying for a number of years to get perhaps a three-year term or a longer term or an open-ended term, because it just provides greater certainty of our income and revenues there. Mm-hmm. So what's happened now is we've got a five-year deal. So rather than rolling over each year and having the uncertainty that comes with that, we've actually effectively secured the next 5 years of revenue from selling magnetite in the New Mexico area. So it's a pretty significant development, and the implications for the underlying profitability of both that operation and in turn the knock-on effect to Strategic Minerals, the parent company. So I think, you know, at another time it would have been taken as a very significant, and it's quite a surprise. We said in the RNS that the team at Southern Minerals will now have the certainty to begin marketing to some additional customers, and they'd be the customers that perhaps would say to us, well, you can't guarantee you can supply us next year, so we don't want to sign up a longer term agreement. So now they can, you know, they know who to talk to, and there's probably scope for some positive surprise on increased sales going forward. But you know, let's take that as a surprise when it comes. I don't want to build any expectation for now. In the meantime, our Q1 sales have been a lot more healthy, and as normal, we will have quarterly update during April. The other thing going on with Cobre is the long-standing claim that we've got via arbitration into the receiver against CB Investments, and it does appear likely there could be some progress with the receiver dealing with this. And you know, again, it's hard to put timelines on it and any magnitude, but it feels like we could be in a position where at some point this year there would be some clarity and perhaps a first distribution. So that would be pretty helpful. But yeah, this news in isolation, it's pretty significant, and there should be no focus going forward on what the rollover is or whether it's going to happen. And you know, I appreciate probably investors weren't expecting this, and they're awaiting updates on our other projects.
Yeah, but it's good to see that you know, say visibility going forward over the revenue stream there. It's good. And let's move over to the, you know, to Cornwall and some big news in Cornish mining this week. Tell us about it if you could, Peter.
Yeah, I mean, Cornwall's always been looking pretty hot, but it's hotter than ever now. I mean, Cornish Metals have certainly taken the limelight this week with the investment by Sir Mick Davis and Vision Blue Resources. That's a great endorsement for Cornish Metals and a great endorsement for the mineral bounty that Cornwall has to offer. I can imagine there's been a major amount of due diligence carried out, and that's on an asset such as South Crofty, which is arguably eponymous with Cornish mining. You've got Cornish Tin doing a crowd fundraise at the moment to add to what they already raised. And let's not forget across the border in Devon, Tungsten West are also making great progress. If you think about tin, I've probably talked to you previously and said it was a bit of a dark horse metal. I think it's fair to say it's become somewhat more mainstream now after the massive price rises. But this is likely only the start of this focus on tin, as there's little new supply. You can't suddenly invent new supply, whether it's from any of the players down in Cornwall. They're not suddenly going to supply tin. They've got it, but we need to move forward and bring that supply to the market in the future. But the demand remains very solid.
Yeah, yeah. And how is, you know, your company, Cornwall Resources, positioned as a result then?
So we're in the mix of everything that's going on. We're quietly becoming, I would say, an ever more attractive asset. We've got a number of ongoing discussions at present, kind of working hard on various initiatives. It's hard to sort of go into too much specifics, but it's about developing and de-risking the project and around investing and funding the way forward. We are also progressing our GPDO application, which is for further drilling on the tin targets, which came out of the successful trenching program we did late last year. From the Deep Digital Cornwall project, we had soil sampling and geophysics results, and they've been gradually coming back in batches from the labs, and we're working on those analyses. Once that's all concluded, we'll be publishing the results, and the Deep Digital Cornwall project is on, very much ongoing and continuing. I guess the thing for Cornwall Resources is it's something that costs us very little to maintain and holding this asset, but the value of it has risen tremendously. Even if you were very conservative on metal price inputs, they're now well in excess of all our feasibility studies. Even if you stress test the project economics using much higher cost inputs, which is becoming the main theme for those looking on longer term projects at the moment because of energy cost rises, raw materials, all of that. And, you know, I can be very confident about how our project stands up with that, even using conservative metal price inputs.
Yeah.
The other factor I think out there at the moment, which is probably not sort of reflected in the asset values of any of these projects for now, is what could happen at the UK government level. And I think we're getting very close to some initiatives that there are lots of wheels in motion from various fronts, and it's becoming much more near-term agenda. The Critical Minerals Association, which we're involved in with a lot of the other UK players, is definitely one of the people lobbying for that. But, you know, especially again with these energy price rises and the raw material prices going up and the needing the security of supply, what we have in the UK is becoming much harder to ignore. And I think there's scope for both financial and non-financial incentives to, you know, reflect this focus on critical minerals That would instantly materially improve the attractiveness of all of the projects in the southwest. We do believe that the UK government's likely to publish a list of critical or strategic minerals very soon. This is much later than most other countries who've done it a long time ago. However, probably by publicly putting out this list, it could well be a sign of there finally being policy changes to follow up and back this up. And that just really ticks the box for these projects and increases greater awareness and focus, particularly in what's there down in the southwest in terms of the many assets and the many active projects. John and Alan are finally going to be back in the UK later into kind of June, July time, and they'll definitely be going down to visit Redmore then.
Okay, good stuff. Okay, let's move from Cornwall over to the other side of the world there. Australia, what's happened at the Lee Creek copper mine then, Peter?
I guess the two-word answer is pepper frustrations. You know, everybody's frustrated that we don't have a conclusion on this yet. That doesn't help with concluding funding discussions. And we remain waiting on the South Australian government. There's been some dialogue, but we're still waiting to hear their next conclusions on what's happening. And, you know, it could be any day, but they're reply when they reply, and we can't really do anything to change that, unfortunately. We have been having some interest in actually listing Lee Creek in Australia. And probably a logical stepping stone to move that forward might well be some sort of pre-IPO funding round. So there are definitely some good options out there at the moment. But bottom line, progress with Lee Creek remains a key catalyst for strategic minerals.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cool. Okay, well, as you know, Peter, it's been 6 months, but, you know, the drill here, if you could give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure, I guess maybe they haven't changed much from last time, but I'd say, you know, perhaps they've become even more extreme. Firstly, I'd say material undervaluation, and that's even more so due to the commodity price rises. The valuations of assets in the southwest and the increasing interest there. I'll leave you to check what the current derisory market cap is for strategic minerals and the optionality that is therefore available at these prices, especially given our exposure to copper, tin, even tungsten, which is sitting at fresh highs. Secondly, secure cash flow. This news at Cobre this week, long-term access, it materially underwrites strategic minerals as a company going forward. And finally, future cash flow, and that's really all about Lee Creek. It remains an unappreciated asset, a game-changing project for strategic minerals when it happens.
Excellent stuff. Peter, good to chat to you. Don't leave it so long next time, and hopefully we catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.